And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues, and more. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is Monica McInerney, the author of a new book called The Godmothers. Monica is the author of some 12 internationally best-selling novels, including Those Faraday Girls, which was the winner of the General Fiction Book of the Year Prize at the 2008 Australian Book Industry Awards. Monica grew up as one of seven children in the Clare Valley of South Australia and now lives in Dublin, Ireland, not too far away from where The Godmothers is set in the town of Trim. So, Monica, welcome to Dads on the Air.
Hello, Bill. It's lovely to talk to you.
So, Monica, your latest book, The Godmothers, it's a big story and it goes from Australia to Scotland to Ireland over generations and several families. It's described as a big hug of a book. How would you describe it?
Well, I describe it in all sorts of ways, actually. I think what I write generally is family comedy dramas because I like to climb inside fictional families and explore all the ways that people work and work against each other and all the drama and comedy that happens under, you know, within a family. The Godmothers, I think, is actually a family mystery in some ways, as well, with plenty of comedy and drama, because the story that takes the reader through it is following a 30-year-old woman called Eliza Miller as she goes in search of the father that she's never met and also in search of the truth about her mother's troubled life and helped, or is it hindered, by her two godmothers who have been, you know, by her side all her life. So it's a kind of a pilgrimage story in some way, as following Eliza and all the people that she comes up against as she tries to find out as much as she can about the truth of her own life.
Yes, you mentioned the troubled mother, Jeannie, but she has a clear idea of what a godmother is. Perhaps these days people don't necessarily know what a godmother is. How would you describe, or how would Jeannie describe it?
Well, I think that the idea of godmothers is changing a lot. When I was a child, like I'm 55, and I had a godmother who was my dad's sister, and I grew up in a big Irish Australian Catholic family. So for us, it was, you know, it had the religious connotation. And nowadays, a lot of children are being given godparents to create a sense of community and support, I think, for young parents, and to feel that when a lot of us aren't living near our families as such anymore. And you can feel that they step in and take the role of aunt and uncle in some ways. In The Godmothers, Jeannie, Eliza's mother, and her two best friends, they met at a boarding school, quite a religious boarding school, when they were young women, like about 12 or 13. And so they were thick as thieves. And so Jeannie very deliberately chooses her two best friends as godmothers for Eliza. I think, you know, possibly recognising that she's going to need some support in the years ahead.
Yes, I think at one stage she talks about them as being guardian angels, and I think that's really what the main character, Eliza, really needs in this story, doesn't she?
She really does, yeah. She's had a very tricky life. Her mother adored her, but her mother has all sorts of difficulties, mental health difficulties, and is a troubled character for sure. And, you know, doesn't appear in the book in present time, without giving away too many spoilers, but you do learn a great deal about Jeannie and what it's like to be the daughter of somebody with this kind of troubles that Jeannie has.
Do you get the feeling, as I sometimes do, that everyone has a story?
Oh, I don't get a feeling. I know it, Bill. Absolutely every single human being has an extraordinary story to tell, I think. I mean, I write fiction. I'm currently on a book tour for the Godmothers around South Australia, where we've been able to travel here. And I'm talking to lots of readers and groups in libraries, etc. And some people are coming up to me afterwards because I talk a lot about, like, this book is all about family secrets and the secrets that one generation keeps from the next. And I've been told the most extraordinary family stories from people who just, you know, will come up to me after my talk and say, look, can I just tell you something about my family? Because you reminded me of it, you know, when you were talking. And, you know, honestly, fact is always outweighs fiction every time. It's everybody has something in their family backgrounds or themselves, because we're all messy human beings, aren't we? We're all making mistakes and getting things wrong. And, you know, from a fictional point of view, what I do for a living, it's terrific, because I want my characters to really go through the ringer and face all sorts of difficulties, but good times as well. And I, you know, that's what we all go through in our real lives, I think.
And yet the characters are not always likable, are they? I mean, you mentioned the mother, Jeannie. She had problems, but also there were things about her that you know, wouldn't draw you to her. She had this capacity for lying all the time, which...
She's a tricky... The book's about lots of things. Like, as she asked me earlier, like, you know, as I said, it's a family comedy drama. It's a family mystery. It's a book packed with moral dilemmas, because Eliza's godmothers know a lot about Eliza, but they don't know, they don't want to share it all with her, that they have to make that judgment about, is it better or worse for her to know the full truth? And absolutely, Jeannie, Eliza's mother, is a really tricky friend. And I wanted to write about difficult friendships too, in the way that you can meet and form really close bonds as friendships, male or female, when you're young. And then you all grow up and you start to see them and go, wow, that, you know, that friend that I had when I was at school and she was just a bit of a rascal, or he was, just a bit of a devil-may-care fella, turns out they're quite dangerous people, or, you know, I can't trust them. You know, that you, when you grow up with them into adulthood and you realise that there's a lot more going on than just being a little bit of a brat at school. And I really wanted to follow a friendship through 30 years, and that's what happens in the novel as well, because friendship is as complicated, can be as complicated as a marriage or as another kind of relationship, and that, you know, do you stay loyal, or do you have to help your friend, or what if your friend is driving you really up the walls? So there's a fair bit going on in the godmothers now I think about it.
And with one of the characters, a cantankerous character, Celine, I think she nevertheless asks some hard questions. Questions we perhaps often ask ourselves. But at one stage she said to Eliza, what have you done with your life? That's a pretty scary question, isn't it?
Oh, it is. And she's a piece of work, Celine. She's one of the Eliza gets kind of catapulted out of this very safe life that she's created for herself in Melbourne. This is at the start of the book, so it's not a spoiler. And two events, she loses her job suddenly, and then one of her godmothers basically, you know, lures her over to Edinburgh in Scotland, because they feel it's, and they're concerned about Eliza. They think she needs to step outside of this safe world she's created after a tragic event involving her mother. And Eliza finds herself in a boutique hotel in Edinburgh, which one of her godmothers runs. And entrenched in this hotel is the guest from hell, the woman Celine who you mentioned. And she was so much fun to write, because she's an absolute piece of work. She just says whatever she wants. She's really selfish. She's really self-obsessed. And I love writing older women who don't give a damn by that stage. And sometimes in my books, I be sure to, you know, make sure that, sometimes the characters get comeuppance, or they learn, you know, something about their behaviour. Celine in this novel, in The Godmothers, gets away with it, but some people do get away with just being so selfish and so difficult. I mean, we only need to look to America to see, you know, what can happen when powerful people can get away with whatever they want. And for me, it was a really interesting exercise to write a character who just is so blunt and so rude, and watching the way people react to them, because I think all of us have met somebody like that in our lives, and you have to deal with them.
And perhaps another thing that comes out is that that everybody has a flaw. I mean, there are some surprises with the characters, but I think looking at them all, I think every single one of them had a flaw, which is really interesting from a writer's point of view, from a reader's point of view.
Oh, they really do. They really do, Bill, because I think every one of us do. I think what I set out to do every time I write one of my novels, and they are all big, complicated novels about big, complicated families or friendship groups, and I don't know anybody that's sailed through life blissfully and, you know, is only well-behaved and only ever says the right thing. I don't think that person exists, so I can't put that in my fiction either. And we all do make mistakes, from fear or from loneliness or anger, or for reasons we want to hide things from other people. There's all the reasons that we don't all show the truth or behave honourably all the time. And it's those missteps that we take in our lives that, you know, often propel us into directions that we wouldn't expect to go in, or make people react against us in ways. And in this in the Godmothers, I've realised, kind of looking back, it's only been out about 10 days, and so I'm thinking about it so much, and readers are telling me, you know, what they're finding in it, and often as a writer, that's when you find out the themes more than, you know, when it's in your own head. But it's a book about longing, I reckon. Like, everybody in the novel has flaws, but they're all either longing for something that they had once and it has been taken away from them, be it a mother, be it a happy marriage, be it, you know, secure family life, or they're longing for something that they never had. And I think, again, I want to make the most well-rounded characters I can within family life. You know, the fathers, the brothers, the sons. Like, there's a lot of, you know, in terms of the themes of your own program, there's a lot about a role of a man and a role of a son and a father in this book as well, because that ever changes too.
Yes, and that is, as you say, a special interest. And I think it's interesting that you seem to be still learning things from the book, even though you wrote it. It's I guess these characters, they take on that life.
It is. It's a fascinating thing about being a writer, and I'm used to that. Like, it surprised me when I first, like, I've been published for 20 years now, and I thought, you know, when I first was talking about one of my earlier books, which were romantic comedies, so, you know, they were kind of like, you know, merry dancers in a way. My books are kind of more complicated and more layered now the older I get. But you do, in the same way, like, everybody reads a book in a different way. So sometimes what I think I've put into the book, and I, you know, is what I put in the book, it will resonate with other people in different ways because of their own life experiences. And something might leap out at another reader that, you know, because they've had a particular experience. And that's what I love about books. I love the way that books change shape for each reader that picks them up.
And we're speaking today with Monica McInerney, who is the author of a new book, a new wonderful book called The Godmothers. And Monica, we've reached the stage of the program where we ask our guests if they'd like to pick a song. Would you like to tell us which one you picked, perhaps why you picked it?
I would. Yeah, it was lovely to be asked to do this. You're lucky I didn't send you a list of 200. but the song I chose is by the Irish super band U2, and the song is A Sort of Homecoming.
And that was A Sort of Homecoming by U2, especially chosen for us today by our guest Monica McInerney, who is the author of a great new book called The Godmothers. So, Monica, we talked earlier about this book becoming a detective story, among other things, and the right answer seems to come out in the end. But I guess what occurred to me is, would DNA tracing have been an option for these characters?
I guess we're going to have to step gently around this because of for fear of spoilers in case anybody wants to pick it up. Possibly down the track it might have been, but I think it was a matter of, like Eliza is searching for the father that she's never met, and her mother only ever kind of left very elaborate and fanciful clues, and possibly she might have gone down a different route, but she needed to find out the story path, not the science path, to her own life. I'm being so careful about spoilers.
Yes, so am I. The images used in the book are beautiful, and they're thought-provoking. It certainly makes you want to visit that Irish town, Trim, and its castle. So I guess you know that town pretty well, do you?
I do. In fact, I went to every single location in The Godmothers. It's set in Melbourne and in country Victoria, and then to Edinburgh and to Gretna Green in the Scottish Highlands, and then London, and then also in Ireland. And again, I won't go into too much detail about some of the Irish settings, but yes, I'm married to an Irishman. I've been living in Ireland for 30 years, even, and still sound exactly like I've just, you know, well, I've been in Australia. And so, yeah, I lived very near the setting, the Irish settings of The Godmother, so I knew it very well. But nevertheless, I went to every location, like Edinburgh, which is where Eliza goes for a start, and spent, I did two fact-checking trips, actually, to walk around and look at everything through her eyes, because they're places that I'm very familiar with. I have to be sure to really look at it differently because, I would walk past, say, a castle if I lived next to it all the time, but somebody who's just arrived there for the first time. So it's a really interesting exercise doing that kind of location research. I had to, really put myself into the shoes of the characters and look at things in the way that they do. But, I do love that part of it because I try to fill my novels with as much vivid detail, and particularly now, sure, Bill, because none of us can travel, to be able to travel through the pages of a book matters even more, I think.
Yes, your descriptions of those Irish pubs. I was over in Ireland many years ago, and one thing that really distressed me was the smoking, where, you'd walk in and you had to virtually turn around and come out again.
But, exactly. Well, there's smoking bans in Ireland now, so that particular strong stench is gone now. But you get the lovely, there's often open fires in Irish pubs, of course, because the weather's so bad. so you still get that lovely wood smoke smell instead.
And with those wonderful descriptions you give of the pubs over there, I'm just wondering, does the Irish Tourist Board know about this book and how you're promoting them?
This one they don't, because it's not being published in Ireland until January next year. But no, interestingly enough, funnily, I was because I do write books set in, between Australia and Ireland and lots of international settings as I can, and I've set a lot of my novels, about five of them, are set in the Clare Valley of South Australia, the wine area where I grew up. And I was actually there on Friday night giving a talk at the Clare Town Hall. And it's always lovely to go back and, it's a small town, 4,000 people, but the Clare Valley is a really, beautiful part of Australia. And I've had lots of messages from people via my social media saying that they've gone up there for a weekend because they've read my books. And they've tried to find, the characters in the house that I grew up in and all those kind of things. So it's lovely to think that people are seeking out the real places.
One of the things raised in your book, a real aspect, if you like, is, but you, one of the characters all have a favourite painting, and you can Google the painting, and there it is sitting up in the Tate Gallery. It's promotes, what's the interpretation as the characters do, and then others could perhaps have a similar one, but the painting, Carnation Lily Rose.
That's right, by John Singer Sargent, who's an American artist. I spent a beautiful day in the Tate Gallery in London. I knew there's a lot of art, the themes of art and the solace of art and how creativity can help you through tricky times in your life. It's a subtle theme that runs throughout the whole book. Several characters, either photographers or they paint or they do something that gives them something else to their lives that I think we all need, and I think we've all discovered this during the pandemic, actually, because there's been a boom in people with all this time on their hands, you know, needing to create something when we're all feeling locked down in many ways. And but this book was obviously written before the pandemic, but this painting is very special to Jeannie and to and Eliza, so the mother and daughter, for different reasons. And I had a gorgeous day walking around the Tate Gallery in London, deciding which painting it was going to be. And I hadn't researched it beforehand deliberately. I just went from gallery to gallery, and it's the most enormous artwork crammed gallery and one of the best ones in the world. And I just went from one gallery to another, waiting for, you know, one painting to say, like, yeah, that's the one. And I turned this corner and looked up, and Carnation Lily Rose is an enormous painting. Like, I'm 5'6", and it's like kind of three times above me. It's just huge and takes up, you know, like a quarter of a wall. And it's a very beautiful painting of twilight in summer, and two young girls in long white dresses lighting Chinese lanterns in a summer garden crammed with exactly lily, carnations and roses. Very evocative, and it feels very safe and sweet. And for Eliza, was not having that kind of childhood, so for her it was particularly evocative. And so that's been lovely to be able to share that beautiful painting with lots of readers, and I'll share sort of some of my research photos of that in my social media shortly too.
Once again, I guess the original, rather than seeing it in a postcard, is so much more impressive. It is a beautiful painting.
The funny thing with that, Bill, is because I had never heard of that painting before I was walking around this day in the Tate, and then I thought, that's brilliant. I found this, you know, like little rare gem in the Tate that, you know, it's not like going to the Louvre in Paris and there's the Mona Lisa and you know, you're not surprised to see that. But I had never seen this painting, and I thought, wow, I'm going to, you know, that's great. I can use this kind of very unknown painting in my novel. And then I stepped out from the gallery with my head full of the beauty of it and the intricacy of the artwork, and into the Tate Gallery shop, which is just nearby. And there's an entire wall of souvenirs of Carnation Lily Rose, like tea towels, tote bags, brooches, earrings. And it turns out it's like one of the Tate's most popular paintings. I was hardly shining a light on a rare painting, but I still used it because it's so beautiful.
Well, I think you mentioned the Mona Lisa. I think people most often seem to be underwhelmed when they actually see the original, but different with this painting.
Yes, yeah, different size for sure.
Just going back to some general questions, do you think people want to get bad things off their chest, or, you know, are they inclined to go to their graves with a secret? I'm never really sure whether people do want to make confessions.
I think it depends on your personality. I mean, I know from real life, you know, because family secrets run through my family as they do through everybody's. And, you know, as a child, for example, we had quite a family mystery in my family, in that one of my father's half-sisters drowned in an accident on a family farm in 1957. And I always felt that there was more to it than a drowning. I was always very curious as a child, and I was an eavesdropping child, and I would hear kind of funny conversations about this incident, and I thought, there's more to it than an accident, you know, whether it was something, you know, had she taken her own life, or was it something more sinister than that? And I also felt very sure that my godmother, who was my dad's aunt, his full sister, knew more, but try as I might, she would never share any more secrets with me. And, you know, and that was their way in that generation. My aunt grew up during the Depression. They were very private people. And also, you know, they would have been perhaps shamed by this death and the gossip in the area. And so there was no way that my aunt was ever going to tell me anything more. But, you know, on other sides of the family, skeletons come tumbling out of the closets. And everyone goes, oh, wait till you hear. Did you know this happened? So I think it depends on personalities. And that's something else that I write about in Godmothers, that all the different reasons that people keep secrets. And some people just have that urge to confess because the guilt is eating at them, and there's a feeling that you might, you know, of absolution if you were to, you know, share it. Like, here it is. Here's my worst secret. A secret shared is a secret halved. Is that true? I mean, I don't come down on any right or wrong answer in the novel. People share secrets or don't, for all sorts of reasons, because I'm really curious about the moral dilemma of secret keeping.
Well, I think that comes out in the book, because there is, in one case, there's a huge secret told, and another case, there was a huge secret kept quiet for future generations.
And you have to weigh that up, I think, as a human being, because secrets, truths can be very hurtful. And that, as I said, that's the moral dilemmas that flicker throughout the whole novel. Mm. Like, you know, if you knew something about somebody and you know that that is going to devastate them to hear, that they might not be able to move on ever from hearing that, do you tell them or do you not? And you know, from a novelist's point of view and from a human being's point of view, that's really rich material for you know, for that way that we all do make mistakes in our lives. And some, you know, something can happen one evening that you would never do in another evening, and just those unexpected turns we can all take in our lives.
And these are some of the issues that are raised in this fascinating book, The Godmothers, written by Monica McInerney. And we've been speaking to Monica today. We've run out of time, Monica, but thank you very much for being a guest on Dads on the Air. It's been wonderful speaking with you.
Thanks for your great questions, Bill. It's lovely to talk to you too.
Well, thank you. And don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, send us an email and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dads on the Air.